back in a moment, and we'll get started.
Wonderful. Here we are. We're back and ready to roll. This is the Mid-Bids Power Hour. We're delighted to be here. My name is Ernest Orienti with Power Hour, and certainly with me is Jed with MediaBids. How about, Jed, a big good morning for the gang and a little hello about MediaBids and yourself and what we've got cooking, and then we'll talk about the key points we're going to cover here today, okay?
Great. Well, I want to first thank Ernest for really being the driver behind these, and certainly the person who brings the vast majority of the knowledge to the table. Without him, we couldn't do these, and he does a fantastic job in his consulting, and also, you know, I think it comes through on these calls how much he really knows about the publishing industry. I'm the president of MediaBids. We started the company about 8 years ago and have been selling ads for publications ever since. If you'd like to find out more about MediaBids, you can visit our website, MediaBids.com, or feel free to give us a call anytime with any questions. We would love to talk to you and are always here. So, and thank you for joining us. We appreciate you spending an hour doing this, and I'm certain with Ernest's knowledge, you will learn something. I know I usually do.
Wonderful, Jed. It's an absolute pleasure being here. My name is Ernest. My company is Power Hour. I founded my company 13 years ago. I've been in publications and publishing, though, since the mid-80s, 2 decades. I have run publications, owned publications, turned around publications, meaning when the kitchen was the absolute hottest, that's where I was, that's where I love being. When times are most challenging, I have also helped clients buy and sell publications. So I do all of those things, and we even have an executive recruiting division where we pair up great companies with great people and great people with great companies. Okay, so a nice array of services and resources that we provide for publishing professionals. And Jed, of course, it's been a pleasure. My gosh, we're concluding actually 3 years of rocking. Next year we'll go into our 4th year of working together. That's amazing, isn't it? It seems like just yesterday we were first learning about travels to Alaska and all these other wild places. But it's always fun, Jed, interacting with you and, of course, all the participants that join our call. So, again, this is the MediaBids Power Hour, and we have a lot of ground to cover today. We're going to be talking today about budgeting in a stormy economy. We're going to talk about, number one, in a stormy economy, why is your budgeting and forecasting critical? Number two, when budgeting and forecasting, what matters most? What steps must be taken now? And then number three, budgets and compensation, how are they tied together, and what levels of accountability make the most sense? Again, to clarify, throughout the course of this program, send emails to ernest@powerhour.com, and we will field your questions throughout and tuck them into our program, okay? So I want to just speak big picture about the state of our economy, and I want to also talk about the state of publications and publishing and where we're at, okay? There is no doubt, and I am not a person who just watches the nightly news or just reads the newspaper. I survey the globe. Okay, I read and cross-read. I'm a speed reader. I read between 60 and 80 publications on a monthly basis. I have a passion for learning. Many people just go to college and say, gee, the degree's on my wall. My learning is done. Let me go do my business. Well, I've sort of been on a lifelong journey since my teens. I love reading. I love learning new ideas. And I'm also a believer that there are no new ideas, that somewhere somebody else has done it. You want to create a blog? Beautiful. Let's go find the 5 best bloggers in the world, you know. You want the best distribution or circulation for your publication? Beautiful. Let's go model what the best are doing, and so on. As I look across the landscape and I look at our economy, I truly believe 50 years from today that historians and economists will look back at the period that we're in as a very challenging one. Let's be honest, it has not been easy. We are deep in some economic challenges, not just here in the States and not just in the sector, but really globally, okay? So there's no denying that, and we have to put that on the table, and you're probably pausing going, gee, Ernest, what a nice way to start our morning. We're about 7 minutes into the call. Thank you so much for summarizing that, but I already know that. Well, you know, you have to pause and set the framework because that framework takes us right into our call and conversation today. But we also have to recognize that as publications, here's the great news, and Jed, you've heard this before in prior calls. We have never, ever been in a better place with technology and data and information than we are today. Let me say that again. We have never been in a better place as publications and as publishers and as advertising sales professionals as we are today. The ability to know exactly how your publication is performing, the ability to be able to track exactly the results that your advertising is generating or that your advertisers are receiving, the ability to capture exactly what's happening with the clicks and the activity at your website, and be able to bring all of that back to your advertisers. If you have all of that in place, quite honestly, your publication might be growing. Let me confirm what I just said. You may be pausing going, growing in this economy? Yes, growing. My clients are growing their business, and they're growing it because everything's in place, and they're taking business from direct competitors, or direct competitors are closing their publications. That's how they're growing. Or at the very least, small growths or sustaining their growths, they are not experiencing the 10 and 20 and 50% declines that some publications are. Okay? Some publications are backwards, 50% from a year and 2 years ago, and that is serious. And if you come off this call and you pause and go, man, you know what, we're tracking backward and it's not going well, let me just tell you that in conjunction with this call, and if you're using all the systems, the resources, and the technology that Jed and I have been talking about over all these years, you will be feeling in a very good space. So let's talk about this. Jed, in a stormy economy, we're going to talk about why is budgeting and forecasting critical, right?
Right.
All right. So we have to get out of the gate here. And as Jed and I were planning this call, as we do every single month, we get on a call, we plan our topics, and we think about the bullet points that we want to share with all of you as publishing professionals. Number one, we said, why is it important? Why is budgeting important, Jed, from just purely a business perspective, let alone from a publication and publishing perspective?
I think just giving you a blueprint on where you're going and how to get there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's a blueprint, okay? A budget and a forecast for all of you. And we realize that we probably have a kind of a range of you on this call, okay? We probably have some of you that are in corporate structures that budget is like breathing. I can tell you in my corporate days, I ran a $40 million division of a publishing company. It was like breathing. I knew my numbers. I knew my expenses. Half my compensation was directly tied to it. I had a lot of skin in the game, and monthly and quarterly was standing in front of a board of directors reporting on it. For those of you that are in that climate, beautiful. For those of you that have some lesser degree, maybe you have an owner or an entrepreneur, and you gently work on your numbers, that's fine, but I would still encourage you, and Jed and I would want to encourage you, to step that up even more. Know your numbers. Do some forecasting. Okay? Know where your expenses and revenues are and see how you are doing compared to those. In other words, really challenge yourself. Okay? For those of you that are entrepreneurs, owners on this call, I know what it's like to be an owner. I've been an owner. I've been one for the last 13 years in my own company and have run my own companies back in the 80s. I know that when you, as an entrepreneur, that you may pause and say, I don't need that discipline. I don't need that hassle. I don't need that extra work. And I'm going to tell you, in this financial climate, you cannot afford to operate like that. You cannot afford to wait until the end of the month and say, gee, what did we spend and what did we bring in? And I know for some of you that are on this call, I saw some of those who registered, so I know a portion of you, and I know many of you have been on our calls prior. I know that there are publications on this call where cash flow has been generally good or where profitability has been good and you've never had to really operate like this. But the times have changed. And if your business even is static, okay, or is not going forward and declining, then you have to change your business model. And you've got to look at your forecasting and your budgeting in a very important way. Let's also recognize that forecasting, and I'm using the word forecasting and budgeting kind of universal here, Jed, okay, kind of interchangeable, because a budget really says, in a formal sense, here is my plan. Here is my plan for 09. Or even if a budget is, here is my plan from January through June. I actually like, Jed, a six-month budget because it's a little more flexible and you can kind of see a little further out. You know what I'm saying? And then as far as forecasting is actually looking just 90 days out in a publication. Where would we be 90 days out? 90 days out. And every 90 days, you look another 90 days out. Okay? So a little subtle distinction between the two. I also want all of you to recognize that this piece about forecasting and budgeting, that we're absolutely looking at your top line, and want you to look at your top line and to look at your profitability. okay? But no sooner do you create even something as simple as a 90-day forecast going out, you look at that forecast, you have to come back 30 days from today. If you are forecasting the next 90 days, you have to look 30 days from today and say, how close was I on my first 30 days? Was the revenue high or low? Were the expenses high or low? Was the profitability high or low? Okay? And recognize as you're doing that, if you're high or low, that may trigger an adjustment in the next 2 months of that forecast. For example, if your expenses were 50% higher, A, what happened? B, will that continue to happen in the next 2 months of this forecast? And C, what adjustment will you make as well? Chad, any comment on that?
For people that don't have a lot of experience with this, what do you recommend? I mean, do you suggest that people set aside, you know, one day a month to do something like this, or is this more of an ongoing process where you're constantly trying to update your forecast and think about the next quarter or the next 6 month budget?
Sure. You know, when we first get working with clients initially, there's some work to get done to agree to create what I call as a dashboard. Okay. And a dashboard, just like in your car, has, you know, in your car you have a few dials. How fast am I going? How much gas do I have? Is my battery charged? Is my engine too hot? Okay, for the most part, if you think about that kind of dashboard, we try to create that laser dashboard with the financial information of clients. So we'll say, okay, let's look at your revenue line, you know, for the last 24 months. Let's put it on a spreadsheet and let's be able to see what it looks like. So we can also look at, you know, what was this month like 12 months ago and 24 months ago, okay? What were your expenses? What were your expenses as a percentage of your revenue? What was your profit, or your what's called formally your net income? You know, and what was that? And what was that 90 days ago? What was that 12 months ago? 24 months ago? So we try to create a very simple dashboard, Jed. And once we get that built, then this process can take literally less than an hour a month. The end of each month, once the dashboard is built and the new numbers come in, then once a month we review that with our clients and say, okay, how are we doing? What does the dashboard show us? What are the touch points that we've agreed? Beyond just top line, bottom line expenses, we might be looking at CERC information, distribution information. We might be looking at reader response. We might be looking at phone tracking and result response. So we may end up having 4 to 6 data points that help us sort of stay on the pulse of their business. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I'm glad you asked that question, because I hadn't intended to say much about dashboarding, but it's actually the step in between forecasting and budgeting and kind of what you look at. So kind of helpful to explain that. Did it make sense the way I described it?
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. And I think that, you know, and there's probably lots of good ways to do it, but, you know, I think you're right. It's that initial step of getting things set up so that you can plug stuff into that is probably the most burdensome.
Mm-hmm. Got it. You know, as far as that, yeah, the initial setup, I mean, like, for example, with some of our publishing clients, part of the dashboard is we keep track of, you know, they have two direct competitors, so in the simplest form, we'll keep track of their total pages, for example. Okay, that might be one of those things we keep track of. We might keep track of how many full pages or half pages. And so some of those things sort of tie in to the dashboard as well. Each dashboard is similar, and then each is also customized and unique, if that makes sense. Let me just pause right here. Again, we'll field any questions for those of you that are on the call. Any questions you have, just send an email to Ernest@powerhour.com or just hit reply to the information that got you here, and we'll tuck your questions right into this first point we're talking about. Let's continue talking about budgeting and forecasting. It also provides a disciplined approach to looking at your biz, a very disciplined approach. And in the economic times we're in right now, you and we cannot afford to not know where we're at. We can no longer just pause, wait for the end of the month, get our reports, and go, oh, look at that, another good month. Because all of a sudden, you're going to get two or three to go, whoa, wait a minute, this isn't a good month at all. And then these trends are alarming, and I don't know what to do to turn them around. By the time the trends surprise you or shock you or concern you, okay, it's too late. There were things that needed to be done 3 and 6 months prior so that it would have changed the financial place where you are right now. Okay, and I can tell you for some of our clients where they've been in sectors, for example, in the real estate sector or in the new home sector, there are some sectors where no matter what we're doing in those particular sectors, there are some really raw data points there. And some of that has caused us to get so out in front of it with our dashboard, Jed, that we've had to make decisions related to people, personnel, printing, and we've had to look at every aspect of the business and really realign and reset the business for different economic times for maybe an extended period of time. Okay? And where a business or an industry or a publication in certain sectors might be in business for 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 years, some of our clients in those sectors, where they've been there and done very, very well, there is just a very new page of work that's being done and realignment like we've never seen before. Okay? So this discipline is important. Also recognize that in this forecasting and in this budgeting step, that it might alter your strategic thinking. It might alter your strategic thinking, for example, about partnering with another publication and piggybacking circulation or distribution. It might alter your thinking about an area of town or a section of your territory that you might say, you know what, we've never gotten enough advertising in that zip code or in that city or in that expanded area. For those of you that have regional or national pubs, you might be trimming or looking at your circulation more closely and saying, gee, you know, we're really predominantly with our readers on the West Coast. Why are we still sustaining 8,000 readers in Florida? You know, the dream was always to be coast to coast. Maybe we tighten that up and get even crisper. So some of that strategic thinking, it might trigger you to create an alliance. It might trigger you to shift your production, the way your production's being run. All of these options come as a result of budgeting and forecasting. But without that step in place, if you're not doing the budgeting and forecasting, then there is no way to look strategically at your business. You're going to constantly be surprised from that perspective. The other piece is that you're also looking at, we've talked a little bit about people. I mean, we've always said, you know, look, you know, we need X number of people. We need, you know, one salesperson per 100 prospects or 200 prospects. But we're having to, in these economic times, look even more closely at people and personnel. And I will tell all of you that where I have seen other dips in the economy, and I've seen other dips in different sectors in the publishing arena, that looking at people and personnel is the absolute last thing. But in some sectors, it's gotten to the point and to the place where it's actually creating a contraction or a reduction of people and personnel. It is not easy. I mean, I'm talking about people that have been with companies for long periods of time. But if those people or personnel were not reduced or not laid off with some of the companies that I've worked with along the way, the entire organization or publication would not continue. And so you sort of step back and go, wait a minute, if we don't make one or two or three of these decisions, we might be jeopardizing the other 40 or 50 or 80 or 800 on this team. And that's really an important point to recognize, though never easy. Let me just pause right here. Let's see. We just got a question in from David related to this. What happened to advertising during the Great Depression? Are there lessons to be learned from it today? Were there advertisers to media that went out of business? But for those remaining advertisers, they continue their campaigns in advertising or the significant cuts back. David, I'll address that. And maybe, Jed, you'll also have a comment. In all that I've read, David, about, you know, in the Great Depression, much like we see any time there's a dip or downturn in publications and publishing, the strongest get stronger. And I probably think, Jed, about like the Sears catalog, you know, how that really came as an offshoot of, you know, the Great Depression and the work and the expansion. And Sears really catapulted forward and made some key strategic decisions. David, there is no doubt that, you know, the very essence of publishing and advertising says what? In a collective way, our publication, our magazine, our newspaper, our guide, whatever it is, brings together in a cost-efficient way. Step back and think about it just for a second, okay? If you were a boating publication, let me see if I can use that quick example for this one, Jed. If you were a boating publication and you worked with 10 boat dealers, I'm going to make this really simple, and you distributed your boat magazine to 100 people, that's far more efficient than those boat dealers each individually mailing to 100 boat people. So let's just agree, when you think about it in the simplest of form, advertising is the most cost-efficient, cost-effective way for any business to partner with you and to partner with other advertisers and to partner with your editorial to go into the right publication for the right readers, far, far superior than to do it themselves. okay? So there will always be a space for publications, but only the strongest. Jed, you want to comment on that?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I'm curious now about the advertising trends of businesses during the Great Depression. I'll see if I can find something out about that.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that also happened on the publication side, or did happen in the Great Depression, was that it really became a barrier to entry, and so as you were mentioning, you know, the strong survive. I mean, that's how some of the real dominant media companies that, you know, are even dominant today were born. You know, I mean, they may have been in existence before that, but they didn't really have that dominant position prior to the Great Depression. You know, things like the New York Times, or, you know, even a lot of the, you know, Hearst papers or Guinness papers, you know.
Right, great point.
So that, I guess that's the silver lining, right, is that it keeps out possible competitors and maybe eliminates some of the weaker ones.
Absolutely. We have another email that just came in from one of our listeners who said, I have a Russian magazine in one of the top cities in the country. We put out 15,000 copies. What can you say about small niches or niches in ethnic markets? Is this a good niche or niche? My answer is absolutely. When you know your audience well, there is a publishing group that is in Europe that serves the like top 1% of 1% in terms of readers and wealth and assets, and all they do is produce 10,000 a couple of times a year and just have a truckload of cash related to their biz. So the size and the scope of how many you put out, or the tightness of your audience, in response, Olga, to your question here, a fantastic question. Serve your audience. Serve them really, really well. Be certain it's going right into the hands of your ideal audience, and then be certain that your advertisers care most about that audience, and that's the most important part. So great questions, and let's keep them rolling as we continue on here. I also want to make one additional comment about this budgeting piece, Jed, and that is be certain that you're looking very closely at your revenue projections. I always see, I often see exuberance related. Oh, yes, but we're going to have this gain and this gain and this gain, and these are the numbers. Well, my first question is, have we done that in the last 90 days? Have we done that historically? Have we done it in the same period of time this year as last year? What does history tell us? You have to look backwards before you can look forward. Especially a key point here when you're working on forecasting and budgeting, one of the most important of all in publishing success, you have got to know your renewals and your renewal ratios. So if we're coming into this month and I've got 50 ads up on the board to renew, and I know my renewal ratio is 80%, okay, I know 10 are going away. I know I have got to handle those 10, okay? I've got to handle those 10 because I'm going to lose 10 and I'm not going to grow my business until I cover those 10, all right, and sell 10 more or 5 more.
Are those 10 going away because of the economy, or are they going away just for normal attrition rate?
No, hey, that's a great point. And now comes the next question, which is probably a whole other call all by itself, Jed, which is, what are our renewal percentages? Why are they 80% instead of 60% or instead of 100%? How do we handle renewals? When do we handle renewals? What are typical renewal objections? How do we overcome them? Sales managers that are on this call, how many hot renewals or hot meetings did you go on in the last 30 days? The toughest meetings of all, the most challenging renewals, the biggest amount of renewals, you know, in other words, a key account or a key company that has multiple pages, 5 or 10 pages in your publication, or spends the most. Renewals are really the meat of the matter in publishing. Almost anyone, Jed, can go out and sell an ad, right?
Yep.
What's the tough part?
Great.
Keeping them, right?
Right.
We've got to keep those ads, and that's really the key in all of this, is that we've really got to be certain that we deliver, okay? That we deliver on those renewals, and that we deliver the results. How do we deliver the results? Provide the tracking by phone and by web, and make presentations that show those results and those numbers. Okay. So renewals are absolutely key. So when you're doing the forecasting, be certain that you're looking at all of those trends. If you're a sales manager or owner of your publication and you're sitting down with your sales team, ask them to show you over the next 90 days what their renewals are. Look at their specific renewal percentages. Okay? Look at the actual volume of new sales. I've sat down many times with sales teams and I've said, okay, so what are the forecasts? Oh, we think we'll have a $5,000 net gain. Oh, we think we'll grow by 5 pages or 10 pages. Oh, good. Show me how to do it. How are we going to get there? Well, you know, we're going to handle our renewals. Okay, good. How many renewals do you have? What percent do you typically renew? Okay, cool. Now, what revenue do you have to drive to post those sales gains? Huh, that's interesting. You have to sell 8 pages to cover the renewals? Okay, cool. Let me roll that back. When was the last time you sold 8 pages?
Okay.
You have to keep working it backward to look at the historical performance to discern whether they can deliver what you're promising going forward. Okay, make sense?
Yep.
All right. Anything else, Jed, to add to that? And I'm taking a look. There's another question that's coming in as well.
Okay. No, go ahead. We'll take the question.
Okay. So the question is, Danny has posed a question that says, forecasting, let's see, my sales, I'm just skipping through here. My sales are dependent on the results of my salespeople. They move at their own speed. What can you do to bring salespeople into the process? Okay. Or how to get the process to motivate salespeople. Danny, it's a great point. When I see that, you know, I'm just going to comment along these lines. If your salespeople are direct employees of your company, which I'm making that assumption for all of you, I realize we may have other more flexible arrangements, but if they directly work for you, two comments. Number one, hire right and hire the best, and that's a whole other 60-minute call. Number two, pay for performance. Be certain that your pay aligns with the actual performance if you want to improve the speed in which they work. There's an additional question that's come in. You just mentioned, we are now in a tough, yeah, okay. So I'm just quickly reading a note, and thank you for the participant that said this, that basically said, we are not forecasting, we are not budgeting, and we're in a tough spot. I am pained to read this, and I'm going to leave the name undisclosed as requested. I'm pained to read that and this. This is not the time nor place to be in that place, okay? If this were my company, I would pause, and if I were on this call, and I would pause and say, wow, I have got to reshape what I'm doing. If I was working for a company that this was not in place, I would initiate the conversation. We need some forecasting. Even if I was on the sales side, if I was a sales manager of a publication and you were on this call, I'd go to the president or owner of my company and say, I need to get closer to the revenue. I need to get closer to my renewals. I want to do some forecasting with you. I'd like to talk about some of what we need to be doing here to ensure that, you know, we can be very profitable and very successful. Okay? So I hope that question is helpful. Okay?
Right, it's sort of like quitting smoking or something. It's never too late, right? You can,
no.
You know, I mean, forecasting and budgeting is probably something which always has its benefits, no matter
absolutely.
How you run in the process.
Absolutely. I'm also reading a note from another participant that says, in today's economic times, do you believe it's more important to forecast out every 90 days, reviewing it every 30, rather than the standard annual budget? My response is absolutely. Absolutely. If you've always done an annual budget, then my words would be, I would encourage you to continue your annual budget. Okay? This is I'm going to draw on a quick comparison, Jed, from the hotel industry, where they have an annual budget, but they literally reforecast each week. Right? They call it their weeklies. They reforecast each week for the next 90 days. It's kind of a roll. So they have a big budget, and then they have a rolling budget as well that they work against. And I actually like their model. When I first saw it, I thought, oh boy, that's really, you know, labor intensive. I had a very good buddy who was in the hotel business. He was telling me about this. I was like, oh my God, that sounds like your children. You build a budget and then you come back every, you know, 52 times a year to revisit. He goes, no. You know, the hotel industry is a pretty flexible industry, and the trends can rise quickly or fall quickly, you know, based on a lot of indicators, and you have to stay very, really close to the biz. So in these economic times where I would historically have never, even up until 12 months ago, never said the words, you know, just use 90 days out and review it every 30 days. I believe we're in, you know, more challenging times right now, and that we really do need to alter our thinking on that. Okay? So, again, great questions rolling in here, and I'm hoping that the responses are helpful. One more question. Responses. How do you counteract the automobile market at this point? Everything coming from the dealers is negative and poor me. How do you battle that? People still need vehicles. You just answered the question. People still need vehicles, and the question is your publication the publication? Are you head and shoulders over the rest, and can you prove it? Can you prove it? If you can, then you've earned the right to go into those auto dealers and say, look, the market may be off by 50% or 70%. Or 30%. It doesn't matter. Someone's still buying, and I'm still the primary source. But if you can't prove it, then you haven't earned the right, then you're in a tough spot. You have got to be able to prove it by phone and by web, and ideally both. You have to create monthly summaries, quarterly trends, annual analysis, and you've got to put it in front of them in black and white. And I've actually sold and coached many, many publications in the automotive sector. You have got to be good. If you think you need an A game in advertising and publishing, you ain't seen nothing like automotive. Okay? They live and breathe the sales world, and you have got to be totally on top of your game there. Jed, let's shift gears.
You know, one thing real quickly, getting back to the gentleman who asked about the Great Depression, I was just sort of scanning through some Wall Street Journal articles, and one of the articles they had recently was about how in the Great Depression, advertising became a lot more local. So companies like Coca-Cola started advertising much more geographically locally than nationally. They sort of abridged their attempts to be a national company at the time, and became much more localized. So maybe in the context of the auto industry, for example, wishful thinking, but that could come to fruition where local advertising becomes more important than national.
Yeah, interesting point. I don't know if I've seen those trends at this moment.
No, I haven't seen it yet, right? But
right.
And hopefully we don't get to a depression to find out. But but it's that's what this one article said.
Right. No, I'm with you on that. And let me just say the words. When I said earlier, you know, if you're a regional, get even tighter or trim your circulation or distribution. If you're in a particular city and marketplace, evaluate every single distribution point. Where do we move the most publications? Where do we move the least? Look at your circulation for those of you that are on the paid side or on the trade side, okay? You know, look at your circulation. Look at those who have that you direct mail to and ask yourself why. I mean, you may really be pruning to get even tighter. So in essence, while Jed, you're talking about getting local, we're kind of talking about the same thing. I'm saying get tight.
Right.
Get tight, and whatever it is you do, do it really well and be able to articulate exactly why you're doing that. Okay? Let's talk about point number two, about budgeting and forecasting, what matters most and what are the steps that must be taken now. Couple of talking points here, okay? Number one, budgets are built and forecasts are built from the ground up. Do not just look at a category and say, oh, yeah, that's production, that's $5,000, that's what the number always is. That is not acceptable in today's climate. Go ask yourself, what's embedded in that $5,000? Who's doing what and why? Okay? What person inside or what resource outside is building that $5,000 or costing that $5,000? Where we might have said, oh, gosh, line item earnest has always been $5,000 for the last 20 years. This is a point in time where we're peeling that onion back, and I want to know what's inside of that $5,000. And you take any line item in financial reporting and forecasting, you have got to know. You have got to build it from the ground up. And things that were assumptions, well, we've always had an art director, might lend itself to saying, you know what, we don't have a full-time art director because we're not carrying 400 pages of advertising, we're carrying 300. It might be a part-time. It might be two part-time. It might be an outside resource for part-time and an inside part-time. Again, all assumptions are off the table. You start from the ground up. Okay, and frankly, no matter what economic times are, I've always built budgets for 20 years from the ground up. I've never said, yep, last year it was $5,000 in this line item. Let me go drop it into my budget again 12 more times next year. I never believed that. But right now, we can't afford to do the same thing. Okay. Also, when you're building forecasts and budgets, and I'm using them interchangeable, budgets being longer term, forecast being 90 days out, You're going to build it month by month. So, for example, if you have a quick example. Just let's pretend you place an ad in the Yellow Pages, for example, for your publication, and it's $100 a month. Okay, 100, 100, 100. Okay, let me just drop that in across the board. Well, that's not exactly the case. In June, that contract comes up for renewal, and you're going to contact the Yellow Pages. Now you found that that $100 became $120 in the month of July, month by month. Let's pretend you have a big trade show that you attend. You have a booth you set up. Okay, don't put $1,000 times 12 months and say, you know, gee, we spend $12,000 at trade shows. Actually, go put the $6,000 in the month of February. That's where the event actually happens. And actually, you might be spending $5,000 of that $1,000 in January as prep for the show in February, okay? Or you might have travel and meal expenses that will happen in February that may not hit to March. So get the months right. When you're working on cash flow, you can't just use smooth lines. You really have to look at what the actual months are going to show you. Jed, any comment or observation on that?
Well, when you're looking at that and you're forecasting or you know budgeting for the next year, how are you handling the revenue piece? Are you going strictly off of signed contracts and then some sort of a percentage of renewals? For example, the person who asked about the auto industry, if you know clearly the auto industry, no matter how good your publication is right now, you know is feeling some pain. And it's reasonable to assume that they're going to cut back on their advertising. Is there any good way to try to get a sense of what that's going to be independent of a contract?
You know, it's a great question, Jed. I mean, when we're talking about, you know, looking at the revenue lines, okay, I mean, you really have to look at what the renewal ratios are, what the renewal percentages are, what the actual, let's take like 90 days out, okay? And you literally can see here's what's coming up for renewal, and you start by taking a look at the probability of who's going to renew and who's not. Then you match that up to your phone tracking, to your web tracking results, and you go, whoa, wait a minute. You know, two that I thought were coming out, I'm looking at their numbers, they're doing great. Two that I thought were going to stay in are not doing so well. That might be a little sketchy, except they've been an advertiser for a long time, and here's a little data. And then you take a look and you say, well, what will the sales forecast be? What have we been selling new on a monthly basis, by number of pages or revenue? And what you can actually see, very simply over the next 90 days, you can sort of forecast, are there bright sunny skies? Will there be rainbows? Will there be lightning clouds? Will there be rainstorms? You know, you get a little pulse on what's going on. And then what happens is at the end of each month, you pause and go, okay, this was our forecast for the next 90 days. But as we delivered actually the last 30, you take a breath and you look back right there at the last 30 and you go, okay, how close were we? We had 10 renewals up. This is what we forecasted based on what we knew. How close were we? This was the revenue. How close we were to that? And so what you start to build is sort of a forecasting confidence. Okay? It's like kind of watching IBM stock, you know, and being able to say, you know, I think it's going to move up $2 today, but here are the reasons why. And it does, and it affirms. Or you say, I think it's going to move $2, and it drops by $2, and you go, huh, my assumptions were off. You follow me on that?
Right.
So in this forecasting model, expenses are easier to forecast for the most part because they're reoccurring.
Right.
You know the number of employees. You know what it costs to print a publication. You know what your office lease is. So expenses are easier. If you do a good job, you generally don't get surprised there.
But the only problem is that so many of the expenses associated with producing a publication are tied to the revenue you bring in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ad creation, layout, sales commissions, you know, are all, you know, directly correlated to whether or not you have 100 ads or 500 ads.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it can be tricky, but I guess you know, as you say, you know, if you're able to track it out, then those expenses become clearer.
Absolutely, and frankly, you know, again, the expenses are easier to forecast and predict. It's the revenue that's trickier. And getting a sales team and getting a sales manager and getting a sales company aligned with those assumptions, that's really the challenge. And that's really where we've done a lot of work and a lot of fine-tuning with clients. We've looked out the last 90 days. We've done some forecasting there. And then we circle back around, Jed, and we say, how did we do? We come back
right.
Every 30 days and say, how did we do compared to that?
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So let me mention a couple of additional points related to budgeting and forecasting, and that is, you know, is it going to be reasonable? We've been talking about that. Are the numbers reasonable? Another biggie we see is that do you have an extra set of eyes looking at the budget that you've actually created? And so what I mean by that is many times we work with our clients and they say, oh, yes, you know, we're working on the budgets and we've got it all together as a team. And I'll say, great, let me look at them. Let me be an extra set of eyes. Who else has seen these? Oh, just me. I'm the owner of my company. Or just me. I'm the VP of the sales for my particular division and so forth. So great, why don't you send them over just to me for reasonableness? I've spent 20 years looking at budgets and numbers. And in a span of 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I'm like, you've got a hole here, this isn't explained, and this is a problem. And I'll literally just punch out and describe where I see a particular problem. So I encourage all of you to be certain you're not the only one looking at your numbers and reviewing them together. Okay? A very important piece. Jed, there's just a little static on the line. Do you hear that?
I heard it, yeah.
Yeah? Did you switch phones by chance or no?
I didn't, no.
No? Okay, that's fine. It's just very small. I believe it'll go away.
Okay.
Also, look at, and this is a key point related to this, the second point we're covering here, also look at expenses as a percentage of revenue. Expenses as a percent of revenue. This is really key. So distribution or circulation is a percent of revenue X. What is that prevailing trend? Okay. Revenue compared to production, revenue compared to print, revenue compared to the overall expenses in your biz. Look at those percentages also as a guide. Okay. We have a question that just came in. Let me address this one from Kathleen. Is there a trend about receivables? Right, Jed?
Right.
Perfect. You know, what's happening with receivables and upfront? I will say to all of you, stay very, very close. I have worked around collections also for the last couple of decades, and I have a real understanding about collections. Most people in the running of publications or in the sales advising of publications don't spend a lot of time in collections. I have and did because my compensation was tied to it. I got real close. And there's a whole set of steps related to collections that have to be in place. But the most important piece is stay close on them, be very firm and very specific with how you get paid. And there's also national statistics about what happens when receivables go out 45, 60, 75, and 90. Okay, those four touch points, all right, large publishing companies, those that do 50, 100, half $1 billion or more, have very specific touch points to the way they already begin writing off those receivables. So what does that tell you? The further it gets out, 45, 60, 75, 90, further it gets out, the less and less likely you are going to get paid. Okay? Jed, anything you'd like to say just related to collections or receivables here?
Oh, makes sense.
Yeah, it's a tricky area in this situation, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So, Kathleen, thank you so much for your question. Let's talk about this third point, budgets and compensation. How are they tied together and levels of accountability? In these economic times, we've spent two-thirds of our call talking about budgets and forecasts, okay? And if you're a leader in your company, the owner of your company, you have got to tie those together. You have got to tie budget performance to compensation with as many team members as possible so that everybody becomes aware. I'll tell you just a quick story. Lainey was my administrative assistant back in my California days. We were in San Diego. And her section of the budget, she just had a couple of categories. But I said, look, Lainey, you know, here are the categories you're responsible for. You're going to run the trade show. You're going to handle office supplies. You're going to handle all the pricing for our marketing and so forth. These are your categories, and I want you to really own them. Let me tell you something. Oh, and by the way, 10% of your compensation is tied to it. Okay? Now, this is an administrative person. Well, let me tell you, Lainey was the most unbelievable wizard, Jed. She went in and arranged the supplies. She went in and prioritized. She put a lock and key on the supplies, which was a little extreme, but I loved her passion. She says, no one's going in that supply room. If they need something, I'll escort them. If they need more, we'll get more, but I need to know what's going in and out of that supply room. Oh, my gosh. She was absolutely passionate about it, and I adored her for it. And let me tell you, she earned her bonus every year. She knew her category. She knew what to spend and where. We ran a very good business, but she really got on top of it. So when you're listening to this conversation today and you're thinking about this, and I'm saying tie everybody, even to the admin operational side, your distribution, your circulation, inside sales, outside sales, B be tied to the forecasting and the budget. If not, then you're not in alignment. And if you don't have alignment, the team is not pulling all in the same direction related to this. Okay? Next point, make certain that those who are most close to the expenditure are most closely tied. So, for example, if you have an art director who's managing your production team, they are the most closely linked. And if you have a production team, tying them to expenses and performance is also key. So if you can continue to take it down right to that level, then you have everybody rowing the same way. Okay? I have done a lot of work this year with realigning compensation. I've always done work at the C-level, the corporate level, sales managers, salespeople, inside sales. But this year I've done even more in production, circulation, distribution, and even admin and operational. And again, those are the sign of the times. I don't care how your compensation has been designed over the last 20 or 30 or 50 years, you have to take a fresh and new look at it from that perspective.
So by closest, you mean closest to compensation?
No, closest to the expenditure.
I see.
Okay, or closest to the work. So, for example, in using the example of, you know, Lainey and closest to supplies, she was ordering supplies. She knew what supplies we had, which ones were being used, and which we needed to replenish. Okay?
Right.
Directly tied. So, for example, if you've got production, they're sitting right on top of your production team and department. For example, in the case of an art director, they're sitting right on top of software upgrades, equipment that's needed, outside resources, equipment that either is going to get purchased or delayed, or a resource we're going to draw on from the outside.
Right.
That's what I mean along the lines.
Okay.
Okay? Does that make sense?
Yep.
Let me see. There's another question. What I am seeing is my advertiser going out of business, or they have to cut jobs just to keep the doors open. My business has been stronger until the last 3 weeks. What do you do? Wow, that's a challenge. You know, people going out of business is absolutely a challenge. My piece would be twofold. Number one, what's happening with my competitors, those that I'm competing with directly? Are they also seeing the same thing, losing the same advertisers? I mean, if you have someone going out of business, you know, there's nothing more to say. I have seen examples, though, where it's we're not doing well, we're canceling our advertising. Then I go look at my two competitor magazines, and those advertisers are still there. Those are that's shorthand for you have not proven that you are the primary source. There's still some sales work and some strategic work to be done in review of this question. The other comment I'm going to make about this is it may also mean you should go out and look more closely. Have I truly identified every prospect? Where you might have said, gee, if I had 50 or 70 or 200 or 300 prospects, and half of those or more are my prospects, are they still? What happened to the other half? Are there another 100 or 200 or 300 you need to add that you hadn't actually looked at or that you hadn't actually got to? Okay, so this is one of those opportunities to sort of go back and say, is my prospect database as strong as it is? And, key piece here, and every 30 days, do they get marketing information, ideally by email, okay, or it could be by fax or by direct mail, which is much more expensive, but every 30 days they should be getting something about your publication. And, Jed, that may be an entire call that we do all by itself. I'm going to make a note. I know early we talked about renewals, and earlier we talked about collections, and we're talking now about monthly direct marketing. You with me on that?
Right.
I'm going to write all those down because these are all really great subjects, but you know what? Those are calls all by themselves, okay?
Now, Ernest, just real quickly, I mean, what would your response be to, the way I think about it is, if a publication's consumers, i.e. their advertisers, are suffering in the same way that, you know, that if Walmart's customers are suffering, they, you know, their response is to try to reduce expenses and lower their costs. Do you
right.
think that that's a rational way for publications to potentially think about trying to overcome a soft period?
You know, the distinction is it soft? Okay, or is it falling, depending on your sector? And,
right.
and I don't say that casually. There are some sectors that it is falling, okay? there are many sectors where it's soft, and we just need to be stronger in the way that we're presenting our sales story and be able to prove the work that we're doing, okay? But if it is truly falling, then we have been restructuring businesses, scaling back the size of teams. I mean, we've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes to literally restructure publications and then be able to go out to the marketplace with a revised business approach and a revised rate card that reflects that, okay?
Right.
So it is a very, very tricky situation. That is not my preference, that we only do at last resort, but at this moment in time, we've done more of that this year than in the last 13 years combined.
Wow.
And more of it in the last 6 months. And frankly, I'm really feeding off the questions that are coming in our conversation today, because it's causing me to share things, you know, about some of the trends that I've been observing that, frankly, I had not even prepared or expected to discuss today.
Right.
You know, which is, you know, hey, this is just responding real time to what, you know, our group is asking of us.
Right.
Okay. So one additional comment, and I realize we're just a few minutes before the top of the hour, and again, Jed, we're going to open the lines at the top of the hour and field some real-time questions here. So for those of you that are with us, please stay tuned, and we're going to open it up for about 5 or 10 minutes. One additional comment about budgets and forecasts, okay? We've talked about, you know, tying compensation, okay, directly to the budgeting and forecasting. And in varying levels, let's be clear, somebody who's administrative and operational, there's a portion. Inside sales is a little greater portion. Someone managing my circulation, distribution, or production, a larger portion. So the more people or the greater dollars that's being budgeted, the greater percent of performance is going to be tied to budgeting and forecasting. And then, of course, sales managers, VPs of sales leaders, also a very significant portion of their compensation, okay? In many cases, it is becoming 50-50. Half you earn by salary, and the other half you earn by budget performance and forecasting, okay? And then lastly, every single month, you need to sit down with those individuals or those departments and review what we forecasted, what we actually did, what the variances were, and what that means in terms of the compensation. You have to manage that every single 30 days, okay? So, Jed, would you like to add anything else to this, or we'll pause here and we'll do a little summarizing and summary of what we've covered, and then we'll talk to everybody on the call about what we're going to do here in just a couple of minutes.
Okay, great.
Anything else you'd like to share with the group?
Well, you know, I think that you know, in my experience in sort of managing my own weekly newspapers, I found that, you know, when I first started, budgeting and forecasting was certainly not part of my my skill set. But you know, as time went on, I mean, it became clear just how valuable it can be. And I think during these time periods, it's you know, like we're going through now, it really is critical. So I would. You know, I think there are probably lots of ways to do it, and I think the ways you mentioned are excellent. You know, but I think it's more important to do it than to do it any particular way. You know, it's starting. That's the hard part.
Absolutely. And I'm just looking at a question that rolled in again. What if a publication reduces their rate card during these times, and what will it take to move it back up? Okay. And that is a big, meaty question. I'll field that, Jed, at the top of the hour. So the person that just rolled that in, I'd be more than happy to address that. I want all of you to know that it is never tough resetting a business. It's never easy resetting a business. That a reset of a business can and will or may or might, depending on your scenario. I spend 90% of my time focused on our sales engine, our prospecting engine, focused on exactly what we can do to compete, to prove it, to be the best source. But if all of that is not working, businesses are closing or competitors are closing, we're still maintaining our market share. We have all of our ducks in a row. We have all that in place, and we're still seeing a fall, not a gentle decline, but a fall. Then we have to go in and do a reset. And a reset is a challenge. And to the participants' question here, it is not easy to do. It has to be very carefully communicated to the to your marketplace, to your clients and advertisers, and explained why. Okay, and then on the other side, yes, you can raise it back up. Okay, so if your full page was $750 or $7,500, and you reduce it to 500 and explain why you're cool. And there's a way to go back in and move it back to 750 or back to 600 or back to 700 along the way, and there's a way to do that in a way that absolutely makes sense. And I'll talk a little bit more at the top of the hour related to that, and be more than happy to speak to any of you related to that if you feel your publications in that space. Jed, we have run these calls for 3+ years by far. The number of questions and the feedback that we've had here has been excellent. But I can also hear, Jed, the feedback that tells me that, you know, we're in really tight and tough economic times.
Right.
I don't think we've ever had a call that has maybe been this pointed about our business. So recognize as publishers and publications, we run a good biz. We provide a really valuable service. Publications are historically very profitable and a very good business, but we've got to be certain that we're dotting our I's and we're crossing our T's in this current economy, okay? The strong will definitely survive. Again, this is Ernest with Power Hour. It's been an absolute pleasure joining all of you. I'm going to conclude the recording portion of this call. Then I'm going to come back and talk to all of you about what we're going to do when we open the lines here at the top of the hour. So, Jed, just give me a moment.
While Ernest is doing that, I want to thank you all for joining us and